Happy Monday, everybody. It is Monday of Thanksgiving week, so happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I hope you have a good, safe, happy holiday wherever you are. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. And everything we do is over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Our magazine is over there, a great online journal if you haven't checked it out. It's called Equity and Access. And the current issue is up there now. The December issue will be up there probably at the end of this week. Oh, no, the end of next week, the middle of next week, excuse me. So check out the issue that's there now. We always archive them there, but the new one will be up on site next week. Got mixed up on my weeks there thinking that Thanksgiving is the end of November, and it isn't. We also archive over at ace-ed.org. Every podcast we do, they're all over there. We're going to archive this one as well. And you'll also see a link to our new website, which is called SEL Today, Social Emotional Learning, SEL Today. So please check it all out, ace-ed.org. Got my good friend Maria Armstrong here. She's the executive, Dr. Maria Armstrong, my good buddy, and she is the executive director of the Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents, a.k.a. ALAS, all right? And ALAS, here she is, the one and only Maria Armstrong. Hi, Maria. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm fine, as a matter of fact. Is it a dreary day? Are you in D.C.?
Yes, I'm in D.C. It's a very beautiful fall morning.
Whoa, up here in Maine, it's a little overcast and rainy. So I'm glad you're having a beautiful day down there. Yeah, that's nice. That's nice. And are you staying in D.C. for the holiday, or are you heading out?
No, I'm staying in D.C. I just I actually headed out pre-holiday so that I could spend time with family, you know, after our October summit. I needed a little bit of
downtime.
Yep, we're going to
talk about that. Yep. Good. I'm glad you saw everybody. Everybody's healthy, I assume. Everybody's good, and so is Maria, correct?
Absolutely. That's, you know, very, very grateful and thankful to God that we are all doing well.
Here, here, and that pandemic, I hope, is pretty much behind us. ALAS is, by the way, everybody, it's ALASEDU.org, ALASEDU.org. It's the Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents. Couldn't it be Latina? Why not Latina? What's going on here? Couldn't it be Latina?
Well, you know, in the plural sense, that's why it's stated as Latino. And we've had quite a few conversations within the org about why we've been even using Latin/O/A/X. And so a lot of people say Latinx. We've just been, you know, but we've had the Latino in its plural form for so long that we keep the name the way it is because everybody knows that name. But we also include in our text, you know, the inclusion of all.
Absolutely. I mean, the inclusion of everybody. I do know that. I just don't like that term Latinx. It seems made up to me. Okay, for some reason, maybe it is, but I don't know. Do you like that? What do you think of that Latinx thing?
I think it, and I think we've talked about this a little bit before. Where
we did.
You know, I've reached out to you know, folks who have a lot more research and understanding about how this is rooted, and it's like it with any, you know, generation, as it should be. People come into their own, and there are a lot of terms that are developed through one's life. We're just lucky, Larry, that we've been able to hang out and see it all happen and change. So I think it's a great thing.
And hopefully we'll see even more. Okay, we'll live a long, long time to see even more. Okay, it's great. I love having you on. You know that. I want to talk. I have your priorities down here because I got a press release on it for ALAS 2022. Okay, but as you look back, and you did this just recently at the October summit, when ALAS and all your members look back over this past year, and I guess the pandemic year as well, 2020, okay, which, you know, both of them together were a mess, all right, what's your feeling as you look backwards and see how that moves us forward? There's a good question. You can write another thesis on that one. Go ahead. Very philosophical.
I was going to say, I've already done my dissertation.
Yeah. Just give us your thoughts about the state of the world and how you can crack it. Go ahead, Marie. Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot of areas that people have been able to reflect, and, you know, particularly around these holiday times when you get a beat in the breath, you're able to think back about, I often equate it to that of, you know, being a classroom teacher and the principal comes in and gives you an evaluation and they're looking around and they're taking note. And the next thing you know, it's like, you know, they could rattle off 5 great things, but then there are 2 areas to improve upon. And we focus on those 2 areas for the next year towards the next evaluation. You know, it's kind of embedded in our psyche as humans, where it doesn't take a lot to focus on the things that you know, strike a chord or that we know that we need to improve on, those kinds of things. So I think in looking back, that's what we're going to find across the landscape. Folks are going to be able to take stock of what they, you know, what they grew from these times where they were challenged, you know.
And I
think they're gonna, I think they're also going to be able to, you know, provide a level of gratitude, I hope, and really give themselves a pat on the back, which most people don't do, and say, well, you know what, I thought I would struggle a lot more in this area, but I actually, you know, I came out okay in this area.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the, you know, when you are in the midst of chaos, or like we like to say, when you are deep in the valley, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to look from that perspective. But when you can just kind of take a step aside or a step out and think along those lines, at least I hope, and that's my holiday wish for everyone, is to really put that, you know, give yourself that pat on the back and put that perspective on the table of being able to, you know, look at the areas that you just exceeded or really, you know, took on, and maybe you failed at it, but you delivered because you took it on. So, you know, I that's what I hope.
I hope so too, to be perfectly honest. And as you talk to all your members, as they looked back over the years, and I hope, you know, we're looking forward, but as they look back over the year, what was the big challenge they saw, okay, in terms of the pandemic and how it can lead to change? What would they change for the future what they learned from the pandemic?
Yeah.
Your membership.
I think one of the members, I think, was pretty very, very clear and very, very at the top of the list is the power and the potential for communication. You know, there was so many gaps in communication, and when you don't know, you start playing the telephone game. And that just leads to, you know, other inconsistencies in clear messaging. And so one of the things I think that they have learned and what they were shared was that the communication within their communities was paramount. And being able to, no matter if you had no information to share, say I've got no information at this time to share. However, we are in, you know, we are within earshot of whomever, you know, we're waiting on pins and needles just like you all for the next, you know, bit of communique to come down the pipeline. I think that was the communication was really one where now I think folks and communities are a little more tethered to one another. And not as, you know, oftentimes when you get comfortable, you just leave people to do what they got to do. And you trust, you know, you trust that everybody's taking on their role and moving it along. But I think now there's a sense in community where everything that affects the school, again, a microcosm of the macro, everything that affects a community, it all will center around all the hubs and the hub being the education community. And so I think that's an area where, moving forward, they have opened up those communication lines. I don't think they're going away. I think they're stronger now. And I think also that they, because the communication would shift from day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute, that this notion of nimbleness in not being so reactionary, but being able to take information
in
and say, this is information. And, you know, as we gather more information, we are going to make the best decisions with the information we have. So I think that those were the two takeaways that most of our members walked away, or at least not walked away, but they carry with them now.
Thought about. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I have to say this stereotypically, okay, the Latino cultures, okay, are very respectful of teachers and educators. And because they are so respectful, they keep they have always kept, again, this is kind of stereotyping, a certain distance between themselves and their children's educators, okay, out of respect for those educators. I'm going to leave the teacher, you do what the teacher says, etc. But your members are saying that communication with the community was key, which says to me that perhaps the and again, you can talk about this, that the Latino community, I'm just generalizing here, is much more communicative with their schools than that stereotypical picture. Does that make sense?
You know, I would have agreed with that statement probably, I don't know, a couple of decades ago, and here's
okay,
why,
good.
Larry.
That's why I said it was stereotypical. That's exactly what I'm driving at.
And so I think that anymore, the stereotype has broadened beyond race, and I think it's the stereotype is the non-educated. The folks that, you know, when you don't know something, it's like, why do we call a plumber? I am not a plumber. I call them because of their expertise.
Good luck getting a plumber, but that's besides the point.
But the point being that you turn to the people that are educated in that field. So when you are yourself have not been educated, quotes, by the standards of the educational system, i.e., you know, you didn't go to college or you didn't graduate high school, and, you know, all of that, all of the you didn't, you tend to have that innate power within you where you give it up to somebody else who has the education, who does have the expertise, and you trust that they're doing the best, just like you would with your own physician. You know, to some degree, we trust that they're giving us the right information. Because that's what they went to school for. And so I think the stereotypical move now, or change or shift, if you will, is far more than just race. It's class. And people don't talk about class. And the reason why it's class is because for so long, we as Latinos, Latinas, Latinx, we haven't had a seat at the table, the economic table, the social class table. And so, of course, we're going to be entrusting to those who know what we don't. You don't know what you don't know.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. And again, I want to say that I was talking stereotypically before, but it is a stereotype that's out there, okay? And I was very happy when you were describing that a few minutes ago. Okay, that there more communication, okay, and people look forward to more communication, okay, for the betterment of their kids, for the betterment of their kids' education, okay, and I think
Absolutely.
That's just wonderful, and I think that's something everybody has to realize, okay, because to me, communication, I've always worked, you probably know them, within NSPRA, the School Public Relations Association,
mm-hmm.
okay,
mm-hmm.
The whole, I mean, communication gets you through this. Okay, and I'll tell you, with all the chaos going on, you see it at the school board meetings and all that sort of stuff. Okay, it's communication. You don't have to scream. Okay, you don't have to scream. Just improve your argument, as the old song goes. Okay, and the communication of that makes it so much easier. I was thrilled to hear you say that. I think that's great that we've had that. I have to ask you, I have this here, okay, as part of the notes I have. Okay, I'm going to go down each of the three things. According to the notes I have, your 2022 areas of focus, okay, at ALOS, are migrant education. We can add communication, by the way, to this list, but migrant education, okay? And this is a key, the Latino Educator and Administrator Pipeline. We need more people, okay? And also, and I love this, which is always fun, inclusive educational materials, i.e. With Latino characters, okay, and Latino phrasing and all that sort of stuff. That's incredibly important. Let's go down each one, but let's start at the bottom. Are there enough inclusive educational materials so that Latino kids, okay, are engaged in their education?
You know, the short answer is no.
Yep.
Which is why it's a priority.
I knew that. I just wanted to ask you. I wanted you to say the answer. I knew the answer.
And the reason for the priority is so that we align ourselves in positions where we can not just say, hey, we need these inclusionary materials, but that we actually work alongside in creating these inclusionary materials.
Very important.
You know, the stories come from our own backyard.
Good point.
You know, the stories that need to be shared come from within our own backyard. And so we've got to make sure that we're providing venues or avenues for which we can use our members' voice to help, those who create the materials, the big companies, if you will, get it published so that they're out there. And I'll tell you, it's a very strategic move on the part of ALAS as an organization and who we partner with.
I think it's great.
I know that for the last couple of years, we partnered with Scholastic, who has been just a tremendous partner, and they are actually working with our members. Yeah, working with our members and seeking authors so that the voices are brought out into published materials. So there's strides that are being made there.
Right. That's so important. Thank you for mentioning Scholastic. I just had them on the show last week, that wonderful lady they hooked me up with. I don't know if you know her name, Pam Allen. She was talking about getting kids engaged in reading through social emotional
That's
stuff.
Right.
They are good, and they really are on top of this stuff. Okay, and I'm glad you mentioned them, because I was going to ask you, which companies are the best. But let me ask you this. Besides which companies are the best, okay, and I don't mean to take away anything from Scholastic at all, okay, are Latino – there's a double challenge here. But we don't have the pipeline of educators we need, okay, that are of Latino background, okay? But do we have enough Latino authors? In other words, you can't build curriculum materials properly with someone who isn't from that basic culture. And so where does a Scholastic, a whoever, okay, find the people who can write this curriculum? I guarantee you, because I talk to all these companies all the time, they're very interested in Latino kids. Okay, but where do you find the people to do this? And just throw that into perspective, if you can, Maria. And maybe it's the same question. How do we find more Latino folks who are interested in getting into education? It's the same problem, I guess. Yeah.
What's your thoughts? Yeah, we opened up with, you asked one of the things that we've learned has worked and communication. And one of those strands of communication is being able to communicate in the language other than English. That's how you've been able to increase the connections within our community. When you have people in the leadership positions that speak other languages, and I don't just mean Spanish. I'm a huge multilingual fan. You know, every other place on the planet,
I agree with you.
They learn more than one language, and so
absolutely.
I think that it's been that way for a long time. Where just from a competitive global market, if you can't speak the language, then that's a deficit. So being multilingual is such a huge asset. Being bilingual is an asset, and being able to create that pipeline, it starts there. And a couple of other things have to happen, of course, and that is, the notion that you can lure these recent graduates into college and universities. But when it comes to, picking a major, Education is often, overshadowed with this notion of, you will be the working poor. And so when we start talking about policies and changes and how to, even when the American Rescue Plan, there's an entire section in there where it talks about creating a middle class. So those kinds of job opportunities should be embedded within our educational system instead of using one bucket of money for education funds and then having to right the wrongs of decades and generations of low-paying wages, because that's how it started out. So to try to correct those ills, let's try to figure out how do we put that in the business budget and create that middle class, pay the wages that need to be paid for the most important outcomes and results that we have, and that's our future, our kids. So there's a lot of things in tandem that need to, I think, be worked on.
I agree.
And just having that discussion will, I think, start to mitigate these notions of education is a bad route to take if you don't want to make any money, or it's a tough job. It is a tough job.
Well, tough job is okay.
Probably, exactly. And the thing is, it's the job. You can make it tough. Or you can make it, because if you have compassion and passion for kids and learning and teaching, it's not going to be a tough job. It's going to be the dream job, and those are the
We don't have to call it a tough job. It's just a good profession.
Exactly.
And people strive to be good in it. And you said the key phrasing to me as you were talking was middle class. Okay, we strive to produce a strong middle class. We have let that go, okay? And for years, okay, and these days worse than ever, I think, a teaching salary barely makes it into the middle class these days, okay? And to be honest, I hate to say this, why would you go to school, get into debt, okay, and all that sort of thing, and then take a professional job that barely gets you into the middle class, okay? And that's really something to think about, okay? And I admit there are other rewards. Please don't misunderstand. I mean, you get a great pension. You have summers. You're considered a professional, blah, blah, all that sort of stuff, okay? But a young person isn't thinking about their pension when they're 65 years old, okay? And we've got to get younger people in there and bring that profession back to where it needs to be. We have got deep problems with that right now, this pipeline, be it Latino, Caucasian, or African-American, okay? It's unbelievable, or anything else in between. And by the way, I have to say something else. The whole idea, and this has been one of the stupid things education has done. We have not made language learning from first grade on part and parcel of, so when kids graduate, they have two languages, English and one other. Okay, if they want more, they can do that.
Yep.
But the fact that and you're right, every other country in the world always produce. Well, I can speak French and German and Russian. I can speak English and Icelandic and Portuguese. Okay, and the old joke: what do you call somebody who's got two languages, bilingual, and what do you call somebody with one language? You call them American. Okay, it's absolutely unbelievable. Okay, and how we haven't figured this out yet, I have no idea. Three languages, trilingual; two languages, bilingual; one language, American.
Yep.
I use the joke. It's an old joke.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's just outrageous. And we're in 2021. How many years have we been talking about this? I mean, I had Spanish when I was in school, but it was like you go for 2 years, nobody gave a damn. Okay, you just got your B or A or whatever and moved on. You didn't think twice about it. Now, these days, you look back, you go, why didn't I learn the damn language? Okay? It's that simple.
And
the fact that we're not doing it now, okay, is beyond comprehension. I know there's a lot of schools that immerse and all that, but I'm talking about every kid, not just the immersive schools. And so what are we going to do about getting more Latino kids into education? How are we going to do that? Dr. Armstrong, fix that one, Maria.
Well, right. I think all of these priorities are intertwined. When you step back to the previous conversation about inclusive materials, When kids start to see themselves in the materials of what can be and love, and then they they develop this love or fire for learning and reading.
That's fuego. That's
and,
fuego
and
for
all
learning.
Of, all
fuego
of that.
For learning.
Yeah, all of that. Then you can start to make headway in, you know, being able to write about what does it mean to be a scholar? You know, what does it mean to be, you know, a resource as a teacher? What is it? All of these pieces, I think, come into play when you start at that very early age. Like you said, even when it comes to learning language, language is another one of our priorities. You know, we want, so all of these are intertwined. And when you talk about the pipeline and being able to tap into that or create it, I think it starts there. It starts at the very young because, you know, if we're not pulling each other up, then, you know, what are we doing? Why even be in
question.
That? That's the whole point of teaching. So we've got to be able to, you know, again, leave the egos at the door and start really getting to brass tacks about how we're going to start solving some of these very longstanding issues. And the first step is to really start making the connecting or connect the dots is what I always say. Connect the dots on these priorities and have these, we have committees that work on these priorities and have them really get centered on the messaging. And so then that way we know when we go to the Hill and we know when we're talking to our local representatives that these are the issues that are, you know, not just in this local community, but they're across the board.
Are there any school districts that you know of, okay, and I'm sure there are, that are teaching language so that a child is bilingual, okay, particularly kids who are English speakers, okay, by the time they graduate? I don't know of one that's actually made that for every kid, you know?
Yeah, we had
I don't know. There must be one somewhere. I don't know.
There are more than one. One of the things
I'm gonna
plug my home state of California, and when I was back, I think I was a high school principal at the time. One of the things that the district pushed was this notion and worked very closely with the state department in creating what's called the biliteracy seal, and the biliteracy certificate. So when you have the backing of the state to promote language and where you are now not creating, sections on your master schedule where it's considered an elective and it has to be outside of your core curriculum, when you start making those kinds of shifts in planning, that's prioritizing. And that's
here,
one of
here.
The things that we did. So it really is what governs the access to kids. And so working on the seal of biliteracy, you know, was a huge step. And that was, you know, like I said, that's a little ways back now. So I think that what happens in one state has to be communicated across states, but states have to be at the ready. You know, there's so much, either misinformation or just plain uninformed as to why this is of importance that we can't even get past, you know, the rhetoric sometimes in why this should be a priority. Some states, I know there are other states besides California that offer this, but not very many. So I think the more opportunities that we have to engage, which is why I love working with our state affiliates, because, you know, it's a sharing across state lines of things that are working in one state.
Exactly.
And how can we use that to help another, sister state and really start putting the resources, time, and effort and expertise, you know, in behind that?
I mean, we can do these things, and you're right. And I'll go back to the beginning of the conversation, just communication. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. People are doing it, and we got to get this together. I mean, it's just amazing. Last thing I want to talk about as we wind down here, we only have a few minutes, but I do want to do it. Another thing that's important to us for next year, it's been important this year, but next year obviously too, is migrant education, okay? And we all see the challenges of migrants. I mean, that's on the news a lot, poor folks. And I don't like it. Okay, we have to do something. They're moving their kids around the country following the harvest. The schools have to pick up, but the schools, as we know, are not coordinated? Well, what's the word on migrant education? What are you going to do with that? What's your focus on that, Alas?
Yeah, so, you know, I had the pleasure of over the summer, you know, I was chuckling under my breath when you said, yeah, you know, the profession gets summers off. I'll tell you what, even as a classroom teacher, that's when you do your professional development. So I don't know. We have to change that vision out there for people. That's a misnomer. But anyways, in this past summer, I had the pleasure of working with our small school. We had a small school district symposium here in D.C. where we gathered some of our smaller school districts, rural districts, and convened to talk about the issues that, you know, have been longstanding with them and how do we support them as well. And so one of the areas, of course, was migrant education. You know, and it was very interesting to me because having been a migrant liaison from back in the day when I was a high school classroom teacher, I also served the district in the capacity of migrant liaison with the state. And we have been talking about this whole, we need to get a better system in place within our state because we already knew what the, what the path was that our families took season to season. You know, we knew where the journey took them and how could we get better at providing services to not just to the kids, but to the families so that the kids would have an uninterrupted education, right? Well, yes. In talking with these folks just this last summer, not a whole lot has changed. So one of the things that we found is if we were just looking from within our own state, but we really hadn't talked about the interstate crossing of the lines. And because we're such a migrant society, you know, our families travel from not just within the state, but across state to state. That being said, let's take even a step further back. We're talking about the people that put food on our tables. You know,
that's
and
right.
If we can't,
that's right.
And you know, that's over 270,000 kids across the nation that are
that's
traveling.
Right.
Now, to some people,
think
they say,
that.
Yeah, but you've got 50 million kids. You got 50 million kids. You know, you're looking at just under 1%, this, that. And I, you know what I would say to them? What if it was your child?
Well,
and
course.
These are the people that are putting food on your plate. If we can't do right by them, what are we doing? And so if it's because of interstate regulations or within state and we haven't been able to, you know, tackle that issue, then we need to make sure that it's highlighted. And we need to make sure that our voices are being heard on Capitol Hill so that when we come to these meetings with our folks and we say, look, we're not here to complain. We're here to solve. We want to make sure that our kids are having an uninterrupted education. What are the resources that we know, particularly since this past year, where what are the issues that we know that when it comes to remote or when it comes to migratory where we can't find our kids, what were some of the solutions used? And let's start putting them into policy so that school districts have the capacity to be able to bring them up to snuff so that they have an uninterrupted education. My God,
wow.
That's the least that we can do for these families.
It is the least we can do for the families, but and I agree with you, but it's tough to do. I don't know how to coordinate it. Okay, it's just brutal.
If we can put a personal life rocket in the air, we can figure this out.
I know. We can go to the moon. Okay, we can go to the moon. All right. So, and I agree with you, but we have to figure it out. Okay,
absolutely.
Okay,
well, Alas is working this. We have a small committee that's working with some, legal team here in D.C. And we're looking at what current laws or ledge do we have in place that maybe we can tweak it a bit so that it works in education. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of things that have been going on interstate-wise.
Well, one of the things that we can do,
right.
I mean, we're improving infrastructure. And if you can get these kids onto online schooling, all right, and again, that's not an easy thing to do, okay, because they're moving around, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But to connect them with the teachers they originally had, I mean, there's ways we can do this. We just got to think outside the box, if I may. We got to think outside the box. We've been doing it crazy for too long. Boy, it's just amazing. You are a wonderful guest. I love having you on this show, as you know.
And I love being on here. It's been a while since we've had a chit-chat.
We'll do more. 2022 is just around the bend. We'll do more. Not to worry, my dear friend. All right? And so you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Enjoy yourself.
You too.
Thank you.
You too.
Thanks,
happy
Maria.
Holidays, Barry.
Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. ALASEDU.org. The Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents. That's a good organization. Check it out. Check out what we do at ace-ed.org. Thanks for listening. We got another two shows tomorrow, and then we're going to be done for Thanksgiving, but we still got more doing this week. Check out what we do. Thanks for listening.